I think it's definitely trying to wash away history by way of culture and by way of demonizing things that just have American context. And, we've seen this one before. We know that the culture is the first thing that progressives attack when they try to bring about socialism and communism. We know how this one goes. It's the same reason that they try to avoid teaching kids any real history in school because they don't want them to be able to recognize the signs. And of course, colleges are just derelict at this point. But it's crazy to me that they would be telling the people who are, potentially laying their life on the line to protect and defend this country and everything she stands for, that they would tell y'all that, hey, you can't put that flag in your bio, or you can't, have this flag fly, or you can't appreciate this part of history, or hey, we're gonna rename the bases. I think it's so wild, some of the things that we've seen in recent history, but it's
It
just a
is.
reminder of how hard we have to push back, I think.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And to your point, especially when I'm wearing the American flag on my uniform and it says, for me, it says U.S. Air Force, and that U.S. is United States, and that's what that flag represents. And so when you're attacking those things, it's antithetical to why we're all here as a military. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of I Came With Fire podcast. Today, we're here with Alexis Wilkins. She is actually a country music artist, but also an advocate. Sits on the board for Women for Gun Rights in America, which is something I think is pretty cool. My wife is a veteran. She was a police officer in the military for almost 10 years. And, she also has a passion about this topic too. So, when I told her that we were going to talk, she was like, "Oh, that's really cool. I'm glad, to know that like there's an actual push for this topic in our country and people are leading the way on it." So, but thank you so much for joining us, Alexis. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and we'll jump right in.
Oh, cool. Well, that's awesome. Your wife sounds awesome, first of all. And I am
Cheers.
So happy to be with you, to talk about Women for Gun Rights and kind of a little bit about me and whatever else we hit along the way. So I don't know. I started out in country music, and that gave way to having some topics that I felt I needed to speak on. I really summed up to it stemmed from, I had an American flag in my Instagram bio, and I was working with veterans organizations, and I was told that that was, way too partisan and way too political for the regular country music. And I just, I thought that that was crazy. Working with veterans and being proud of the country you live in and everything it stands for is not a partisan issue, as I'm sure your audience is well aware. So
Definitely.
For me, that gave way to talking about the Constitution, educating young people on the rights that they have derived from God, and really just leaning in into all of that stuff. Of course, elections happen along the way, campaigns happen along the way. But I've been really fortunate to continue singing country music and finding an audience that has the same values and supports, America, the Constitution. 2A is a big one, of course. And so it just kind of all snowballed from there.
Isn't that funny that when you use the American flag, people automatically know now what side of the political aisle you're on, right? Isn't that sort of sad? I remember a lot last year, people were like, "Oh man, if you got an American flag on in front of your house, then I'm not going to deliver DoorDash to it. Or if you've got an American flag in front of your house, then I know that it's probably dangerous to go up to your door or whatever." And then, at the DNC, they had all of these flags and it was like, take back the flag, all of this. And, I think it contributed a lot to people seeing right through the left's pretending that they're very pro-American. All they've done for the past several years is tell us how much they hate this country, so something uniquely American about Second Amendment rights and knowing that our rights are inalienable and given to us from our creator, especially when you look at the rest of the West today, our Western partners like Australia and Europe certainly don't abide by a lot of the same principles that we do or try to here in America. Canada is the same. And so, I love to see and have these sorts of conversations because we're the only ones sticking up for what Western values are here in America. People aren't being thrown in jail for Facebook posts. We're allowed to own a gun, all of these things. And, having this conversation, while it's great to, you know, at 2A at large, there's a whole other population here in our country of women who are starting to purchase more firearms. And I think that that is really cool to see, because I think a lot of people would almost just sort of assume it's a guy thing, but it really isn't. There's a lot of women who enjoy firing weapons and going out to the range too. But it's so funny. You know, when you put an American flag in your bio, people are like, that's too partisan. It happened to me in the military too. You know, like when I, on my way out, do you remember hearing about the extremism stand down that the DOD had a couple years ago, right before COVID ran around? Yeah. And, I had troops who were told to go around and find people with specific bumper stickers on their car. My commander had taken down license plate. I was military police as well. God. Yep. Okay. Their dorm rooms, you know, being told that you can't have the Gadsden flag hanging up in your dorm room. These are things that are like American iconography, historical, you know, things. Like the Gadsden flag is very historical. The appeal to heaven flag is also historical. These things, they're too partisan. You know, we didn't make them partisan. They're just American history. You know, the left made them very partisan, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, I think it's definitely trying to wash away history by way of culture and by way of demonizing things that just have American context. And, you know, we've seen this one before. We know that the culture is the first thing that progressives attack when they try to bring about socialism and communism. You know, we know how this one goes. It's the same reason that they try to avoid teaching kids any real history in school, because they don't want them to be able to recognize the signs. And of course, colleges are just derelict at this point. But right. You know, it's crazy to me that they would be telling the people who are, you know, potentially laying their life on the line to protect and defend this country and everything she stands for, that they would tell y'all that, you know, hey, you can't put that flag in your bio, or you can't, you know, have this flag fly, right, or you can't appreciate this part of history, or hey, we're going to rename the bases. You know, I think it's so wild, some of the things that we've seen in recent history, but it's just a reminder of how hard we have to push back, I think.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And to your point, you know, especially when I'm wearing the American flag on my uniform and it says, you know, for me, it says U.S. Air Force, and that U.S. is United States, and that's what that flag represents. And so when you're attacking those things, it's antithetical to why we're all here as a military, you know, when I was still in the first place, mm-hmm. right? You know, for America. I love that you touched on values, and to go back to your God-given rights, you know, having a set of moral principles that are founded as well in Christian faith, or whatever, I guess, whatever religion you do follow here in the United States, because we do have freedom of religion. Those things are so important to having not just, a moral, personal moral compass, but to have a compass as a society and as a civilization. You have to have a set of shared identity and goals and belief systems. Otherwise, you're just going to fall apart. You know, our founders knew this. They wrote about it. They talked about it. These are things that are the tenets of any sort of society. You have to have a driving force and unifying factors. Otherwise, you'll fall apart. And again, you know, attacks on the 2A, Second Amendment, and the First Amendment here, right? These things are not separate of one another by any means. The First Amendment, right, and Second Amendment are very linked. Attacks on those are attacks on things that make us American. And, you know, when you look at this experiment, this American experiment, you know, the Constitution is sort of like the Magna Carta on steroids. You know, it's this thing that gives people it outlines why this government of the people is the only way for us to move forward. And to attack the things that uniquely make it what it is are to erode the very things that make us who we are. And to your point as well, when you erode identity, this is why the Nazis made Jews wear the yellow star. You know, you can point to so many other different examples in history where people's identities were stripped from them, you know, as a way to destroy who they are. And this is a very intentional thing in our country that is happening. It's not just something that's a byproduct of a stupid ideology. That ideology is a byproduct of that very intentional act of trying to destroy who we are as Americans. And I believe that to my core.
I absolutely agree. I do too. I think it's, you know, they definitely set out on the path, and whether, you know, I believe that it's a bigger funding that, you know, has these people out here writing, you know, swastikas on Teslas. You know, it's the same people who would happily go down that path against conservatives who are the ones doing that, which I find incredibly ironic. But it's definitely to shred the fabric of the culture. And, you know, you see it so much in, this is why country music's, you know, we try and protect it as much as we can. And, you know, even some of that gets sacrificed to the woke media.
For sure.
You know, entertainment even, it's so infiltrated. And, you know, people, I think, are tired of listening to music by people who actually hate them. But, right. You know, it was definitely an uphill battle for a while there, and continues to be, because, you know, the conglomerates still own the radio. They still own a lot of the labels. John Rich talks a lot about this, and he does a fantastic job explaining it. But it really is, the more you see the pieces come together as a concerted effort to do those things and to, you know, demonize what ultimately should be and is positive culture, positive family structure, any positive religious affiliation that sets good morals for you and your family, you know, all of that stuff, it's just completely flipped upside down. But
yeah, you
know, I think it's on the mend, hopefully, as people see it and as they realize that there's no future here if we continue. Yeah.
I think you're right that it is on the mend. I think a lot of this wokeness that we've come up in, I mean, I'm not sure what year you were born. Don't want to ask you out of respect, right? But, you know, I'm an elder millennial. And, you know, I can remember specifically when a lot of this started to change. You know, the woke came in, and I sort of blame millennials a lot for it. We've been pretty bad about, a certain group of us been pretty bad about it. But I think it's over for a large part of it. There's a whole generation of young men and women who have grown up under this and been told that who they are and their immutable characteristics are inherently bad. And now those people are becoming adults. And this is just something that the dogmatic half of our country doesn't seem to recognize, that when you tell people for years and years and years, especially when they're young and influential, that they're bad, they're going to grow up and they're going to internalize those things. And they're going to recognize at one point that that's not true. And I, you know, who I am and what makes me who I am, some of these immutable characteristics about me that you're telling me are bad, aren't bad. And then they're going to become voters, and they're going to become active and being a voice for these things that used to be taboo, but aren't going to be for much longer. And like you said, it's eroding and going away. And there's a lot of ways that I've recognized that. And a lot of people do. We talk about it here on this podcast. People are sick and tired of it. They're sick and tired of having things shoved down their throats. It's fine that we have differences, but to make it the main point in this tyranny of the minority, like I like to say, in this country, is it's done. I know there's a lot of people on both sides, because, you know, one half that may agree with the politics is sick of being lumped in with this very small group of people who take things too far. And, you know, there's that on both sides, a very far polarization. But I think there's a lot of people that are really ready to just kind of get back to center and move forward as Americans. And I see that from both sides. And that's saying a lot, because I live here in California, and there's a lot of people who are liberal who are, I know, right? Behind enemy lines outside the United States, right? Joke. But you know, they're ready too, right? But I'm actually really interested in hearing how you even got into country music and how you got into performing and doing all that. Was this something that you were raised in, you've been doing since a little girl, or what?
So my family is not musical at all. It was something that it's again, long story medium. I'll tell the long story medium version.
Okay.
I was looking into, of all things, the coal fires in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I had read an article in Smithsonian Magazine when I was like 7, and I asked my mom, I said, I really want to help with this. I want to donate all of our money.
Wow. Yeah.
And she goes, okay, well, we can't donate all of our money. That's just, you know, it's not really how money works, but, you know, people do something they love to raise funds and awareness for something they believe in. And that sentiment has stuck with me throughout my entire career and is really the center point of everything I do. Of course, the cause has changed. You know, you grow up and you go, okay, here are the things that I really care about. For me, it's veterans. For me, it's law enforcement, first responders. But, you know, it can be something different for everyone. You know, everyone can have the ability to change reality and help with something they believe in. And so, I, going back to when I was 7, I went off like that night, and I wrote a song on my little tape recorder, and I recorded it, and I brought it back to my lovely and supportive business oriented but like not musical parents, and they go, that's great, like that's amazing, what do we do? We had a friend who just said, you know, like, hey, if she wants to do this and let her donate the money from it, you know, it'll be a fun. She'll get it out of her system and it'll be fun and she'll go on with her life. And I ended up recording the song. We raised money from it. We donated it. We made a difference. And I never stopped doing music since. And so for me, I just kept writing for other artists. I knew I always wanted to do country, but I also didn't want to do the 360 deal where they sign you in all capacities, put you on a TV show, and usually it's some like scary industry thing, and they hand you an album and tell you what you have to do. I didn't want to do that. Thank goodness my parents were incredibly involved and protective. You know, they kind of thought, all right, if our daughter wants to do this crazy business, we're at least going to, you know, really, really be in there and make sure she's safe. So I'm really grateful for that, especially now seeing what happens in the industry, hearing about what happens in the industry, really grateful. But continued, was out in LA for a little bit because I was writing for a pop studio out there with like Flo Rida's studio at 16. Oh, wow. So funny. And then was ultimately at the same time back and forth to Nashville writing for other artists and myself. And of course, as I said, I knew I wanted to do country music because I also grew up mostly in Arkansas, a little bit in Europe, a little bit in Arkansas, mostly in Arkansas. So that was kind of that. And then I just kept doing it and started putting out music. And that's kind of, I guess, what led me into all of it.
Yeah. That's interesting. You said you grew up a little bit in Europe. I did too. My dad was active duty Air Force, and I went to high school in Germany and graduated high school there. Cool. So yeah. Just out of curiosity, where did you spend your time in Europe growing up?
We were in England and Switzerland, and I was pretty young. So we moved over there when I was two-ish, and then back to the States, straight to Arkansas when I was 9-ish.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Is that a military brat thing or business? Like you said, your parents were in business or?
Business, yeah. My dad was in business, so moved us around a bit.
Well, it sounds like you had a set of parents who had a good head on their shoulders. And, you know, I'm always interested when I meet people and talk to them, especially guests on the podcast, about how they grew up and what sort of principles their parents instilled in them, because you learn a lot about people when you hear about these things, the way they grew up. But it sounds like you probably had parents who held you to account and showed you that, you know, who you are is okay, and you know, instilled sets of principles in you. I mean, would that be accurate to say that that happened with you growing up?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. They, I'm an only child, and we moved around a lot. And so there's a lot of, now that I'm older, I realize there's a lot of outside influences that have the potential to, you know, affect your child, especially when you're going to school in different countries or different states. You know, we were in Massachusetts for a minute. We were in California for a minute. Arkansas was great. No complaints there with the system. But, you know, there's just a lot of opportunity for someone else to be raising your child. And I say that as someone who doesn't have kids but wants them. And it's just, it's fascinating looking back how many opportunities someone else would have had to influence the way that I thought, or not even just politically, but value set. There was just so much communication and so much accountability and, hey, this is right and this is wrong, with my parents themselves, that I never looked to other people to, of course, you know, you listen to other people's opinion. You have to substantiate the reason that you believe something. You know, my mom's dad, my papa, I call my papa, was always huge on that. He was, you know, hey, if you believe something, you better be ready to back it up, and you better also look into the other side and understand why you believe what you believe, and make sure that you understand their position as well. So it wasn't, you know, lack of understanding. It was just, okay, like these are my values, and I hold very steadfast to them. And then it was only solidified and really galvanized by going to college in this climate. I majored in business and political science, and I went to Belmont here in Nashville, which I thought, you know, it's a private Christian university. It's probably going to be, you know, not as crazy as these other school stories I hear. And this was in, you know, 2016. So of course we're were in the election. So I went to college over the first Trump administration, and he won while I was in school. And, you know, they were mad about it. Some of the people on campus, some of the teachers offered us, you know, hugs at the end of class if we wanted, which I politely but firmly declined.
yeah.
So, you know, things like that happened. And then you see the temperature rise as the administration goes on, and things are happening at the same time, you know, concurrently in my life with the music aspect and the fact that people are criticizing. And when I say people, I mean industry, or just like, it was never audience backlash. It was always people, you know, within the industry who was like, oh yeah, we'd love to sign you, but like, you know, it's the American flag is a little partisan. Or even, you know, you're on this tour. Hey, because you're on this tour, we really liked you to not post this. And it's egregious, the things that these people think that they can ask of you, especially when it's something as simple as putting a flag in your bio, which we established is crazy. But for me, you know, having all these things happening at the same time, it really made me realize that, you have to be holding to your values in this day and age. You know, if there was a time where you could be a little bit more flimsy, a little bit more vanilla about it, you know, there's really no, even biblically, there's no lukewarm, I think, in this specific time in our nation. And so, you know, I went to college in that time, and I didn't even speak out, you know, in any offensive way. It was just very obvious that I wasn't being indoctrinated by these professors that were trying to indoctrinate, you know, class by class, 30 students by 30 students. And it was a comparative politics class, which you'd think is pretty simple, you know, dictatorship bad, free market good, you know, pretty, everyone can kind of agree on that. And I get to the end of the semester, and this professor gave me an F. Now, I love school. I've never gotten a B in my life. And so for me, this was very bizarre, and I knew that it was definitely politically led. And so I had to go back and forth with the dean of the school, the dean of the department, the head of whatever, the president, eventually meeting with the president of the school. But, you know, four or five different meetings in order to get this grade realized and make sure that they flipped it so that it would be remedied somehow. They ended up making it a pass because the president agreed that this was a ridiculous case of discrimination. Even if he didn't agree with me, it was pretty hard to deny.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I had to go through all of that, and that's kind of background way of talking about my, you know, my parents' values. My parents sat there for the meetings. They didn't say anything, but they came to every meeting and just, you know, sat there and made me feel like me going up against an institution like a university for what I believed was right was the right thing to do, which of course it's something I take with me as it was the right thing to do. I talk to students now about it and tell them how to not fold on their values in high school and college, and it's something I greatly value, but at the time it was really scary. And so I've seen those values take me so many different places in my life, and I really do think about them at every cornerstone, truly.
The best thing you said in that was that your parents and your grandfather taught you that you have to see both sides, and you have to truly know what you believe in before you can speak on it, and that you had such a rock at home of principles and ethics that even if somebody outside of that, and that's going to happen, right? Like I had teachers who spoke a lot about politics as well. And they try to influence, especially high school students and even now even younger, but that you had such a, which is scary, but you had such a rock at home that it didn't even sway you when people were trying to lead you off this path down this sort of ideologically captured agenda, right? So I mean, just that is so crucial to just retouch on, because hey, like parents, like your kids are looking to you for this sort of guidance, and you can be that influence completely and totally in their lives. Obviously, other people are going to have influence on them, but this is where those foundational beliefs, ethics, and morals are taught. And, you know, you saying like, you know, I can look back and say, well, A, I have to know all sides of this because I have to be able to prove when I talk about it that I know what I'm talking about it. But that also, in the face of all these other things going on, I have this to look back on and stand up on. You can't just have this styrofoam foundation. Like, you have to have a bedrock of these things. And it's so important for parents today to do this and lead your children into these beliefs and, you know, give them something to stand on and to show for it. You know, it's so important that parents are active in their lives, because there are a ton of other people out there looking to be, and not in a good way. And you know, you're talking about school, and that's wild that you had to go through that. You know, I had some experience with that as well, with a specific teacher, especially when we were doing things that were more opinion based. And you would think it's okay if I'm giving my opinion that you're going to get all kinds of opinions, not the opinion echoed back at you. But it wasn't okay. Luckily, I didn't have to go through anything as arduous as you did in that ordeal, but you know, I've experienced it. But you know, you can go back decades and look at how schools, when I say schools, I mean universities, have been ideologically captured by this Marxist agenda. You know, the Weather Underground is an example. Barack Obama had a friend who is a professor who was very influential in his life and a lot of the things, and his name escapes me right now, but that person had a lot to do with sort of the ideology that Barack Obama brought to his presidency. But I think it's almost like expected at that level, and it, not to say that it's okay, but that's been going on for so long. She's like, oh, it's a college student, right? You're so, you know, look at civil rights, look at the Vietnam era in our country, right? You know, college students are some of the largest, you know, groups of protesters for whatever, right? And this is, again, also part of a Marxist ideology. You influence the young, right? This is a literally stated goal of them. But to see now how all of this ideology has filtered down into elementary schools, and, you know, that's terrible. And that says to me, going back to about your parents, it's just how uninvolved parents have become in schools, and how much schools are trying to sever that tie that parents have with what happens at school, which is not okay. And, you know, this is, and we actually had a conversation with another individual on here. We talked a lot about how, you know, parents that go to student board meetings tend to just be the moms, but that dads need to be just as involved. Both of these parents, this as a unit, need to be involved in these conversations with your kids and getting involved when things are going a way that aren't okay, whether it's, you know, literature that's inappropriate, or your teacher, the teacher is trying to influence students in things that have nothing to do with actual education and more to do with opinionated social justice. Like, those things are not okay. You are here to teach my child. You are here to be involved in that way, and that way only, right? Which is why there's so many people who are homeschooling now. Chris, my kids, he's not old enough to be in school yet, but he's coming to that age. But Chris's kids are all homeschool, you know, my co-host, and they do that on purpose because of things like this. And it's scary. You don't want other people being involved in that, but it is so vital that you are involved as a parent, because, I mean, here you are, this testament to something that we talk about on this podcast all the time. And, but no, it ties right into knowing your rights. It ties right into First Amendment free speech. It ties right into guaranteeing your freedom of speech with the Second Amendment, right? Yeah, and absolutely. So, were your parents as well involved in teaching you about firearms or talking to you about the importance of constitutional rights and things like that as well?
They were, yes. I was, from a very early age, educated on, started with American history, because it was interesting starting most of my education in Europe. You know, you're obviously getting world history just as you would in America, but there's much less of a focus on American history, is, I suppose, in some token understandable, especially in England. You know, they kind of lost that one. I'm just kidding.
They did a few times.
But yeah, exactly. But no, my parents from a young age taught me a lot about American history. A lot about, I don't mean to denigrate world history, because very context is really important, and I feel like that's helped me.
I get you.
Geopolitically, but but from a young age, I knew that I had rights that were, you know, expressed to us by our government, but given to us by our creator. And that, I think, gives you a lot of autonomy early on to go, okay, not only do I have these rights that, you know, can't be taken away from me as far as your First Amendment and everything that's pretty intrinsic about them, but also it gives you a sense of responsibility and ownership of them. And I think that is good context and a good bedrock for everything else that you learn along the way. And specifically in this political environment, it helped me. I saw a lot of my friends, even ones that maybe politically or value-wise agreed with me, and we, you know, we were aligned, but they still had this slight undertone of feeling bad about who they were or bad about what they believed. And I think that me having the context that my parents taught me really, really early on is I didn't feel bad about being an American or believing that I had rights or believing that, you know, there was a true north of value set and this is wrong and this is right. And I think that kids who maybe even are conservative and have and maintain good values and really truly believe in them still have a little bit of an apology that comes with them.
Right.
And I don't think that they should have that. And I think that really, as simple as it sounds, learning about the Constitution and some of those things really young helps that. And then, of course, we get into 2A and learning that that protects the First Amendment and all of those really important relationships, especially living in England where they don't have, or Europe in general, but England specifically, yeah. You know, even the policemen carry batons.
They just outlawed ninja swords
everywhere.
There.
Pardon?
They just outlawed ninja swords in the UK.
Exactly. They don't know what they're doing at all.
No.
So they go down the rabbit hole of craziness. And when you don't have the protections that, you know, we do in America, you can kind of see what happens. But understanding that context was really huge for me. And then just firearms in general came a lot from my mom. My mom's grandfather.
That's cool.
on her mom's side were, yeah, it's an interesting story. My mom's grandfather taught her to shoot. And mm-hmm. taught her firearm safety. And, you know, if they shot any of the apples on the tree that were about to be picked, they were put in timeout. You know, it's just all of the real things that you need to learn. That came from my mom. And so my mom taught me how to shoot and ultimately everything that came with that. And my dad, you know, he's involved too. He has his carry and he's involved with it. But a lot of the education really came from my mom. So for me, there was never kind of moving into the, like, women in firearms piece, there was never really a stigma against it for me because my mom was the one who taught me.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I really do, because it's not, that's the uncommon answer, I think. Most people would say their dads got them into guns, but I like that. You know, my wife wants to have a really heavy hand in educating our sons about weapons and using them, because, you know, she used them so much, a lot of different weapon systems when we were still active duty, but mm-hmm. that's cool, and she can have that relationship with my son as well, and share that passion and then teach why it's important, and safety is one of the best things that you can do for your kids. And before we start trekking down that path too much, I just want to say something you said about autonomy and then knowing that your rights are God-given, right? So you're talking about liberty and understanding that you have the ability to do not just what you want to do, but that what you ought to do and what that you ought to do as an American citizen and uphold those rights that we have and the things that, you know, make you who you are. That autonomy, to use the word that you said, is so important. You know, so many people lose sight of that, and it's sad to watch so many people just, you know, think that they're beholden to the government rather than that they're beholden to us, and that yeah. these rights, they're not provided to you from the government. The Constitution just enshrines them. The Constitution does not give them to you. And I think people misspeak on that a lot as well. But once you understand that these rights are yours inherently, inalienably, if I could speak, it's so much more empowering to know that that's who you are as a citizen. And not a lot of countries have that and teach that. You know, Europeans are much more of a collective hive mind. You know, I lived there in high school. I was stationed there and worked with Polizei, German police, when I was there. And it's so funny watching these differences, especially if you try to frame it when you observe Germans and the way they behave and Americans, right? Like,
yes.
Really fast example, you know, German police, they don't have probable cause laws. You don't have those rights in Germany. And the Germans are like, yeah, that's right. You need to behave. And otherwise, they're going to get you. Whereas Americans are like, hell no. You know, I have there's probable cause laws here. And where's your warrant? Come back with a warrant and level 4 plates or whatever, right? Like, just yeah. That's such a niche example. But it's a very spot on treatise in how we think as Americans and how Europeans think, just to say that. But you're right. We have autonomy. And the empowerment from that is recognizing your rights are yours and yours alone, and that means nobody can take them from you. And if they try, you cannot be in the wrong to defend your rights. So I love that you
Absolutely.
Said that.
And I think it's, you know, it's hard for me as an example, because I think of all of these really valiant, incredible things that people do for this country. You know, yourself and your wife for serving this nation. You know, there are some really valiant things that people do. So I feel funny giving this example, but as per, in relation to me speaking up, even in country music when it was, you know, unpopular, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Like, it's funny because you do media on this and you talk about it and you try and inspire other people with it, but ultimately, speaking up for your values and things you believe in shouldn't be like a life or death example. I appreciate that people want to, you know, need the example of it. I really do, and I don't mean that bad, but it is interesting to me. I mean, I don't know. Someone in country music told me that, you know, hey, you should make all of your money in country because, you know, you're talented. You should make all of your money in country music and then come out as patriotic. You know, you just really should wait and serve yourself first. And then, you know, and then if you want to say something, you can. And, you know, this was a couple years ago now, but I just thought to myself, if I do that, we're not going to have a country in a couple of years. Like, if everyone did exactly that, we wouldn't have a country. It would not be becoming cool to speak up about the things that we believe in and being an American. We would not be having a pseudo Reagan revival if everyone decided to make their money first. We wouldn't be having a tariff conversation if everyone decided that they just wanted to get rich first. You know, I just think that there's a huge cultural reset that's bleeding into every other kind of reset, economic value. And I think it's important, but you know, it's funny because speaking up as an American with American values in, you know, other countries, it is interesting. I love I have to bring up the memes that say, you know, the European mind could never comprehend.
It's so true.
It's so funny because it's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even, you know, trying to explain to some of the Germans that I got to know pretty well there, just how big the United States is. It's like, I can drive for 3 hours and have driven through France and then into the Netherlands in 3 hours. I could drive for 12 and still be in the state of Florida. Right. They're like, whoa, you know, it's like, what, how does that? It's like, yeah, that's pretty wild. But, It sounds like country music has come a long way from, we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way, Toby Keith, right? With being upfront about your patriotism. But anyway, so how did you get involved in the movement for women for gun rights in America? Like, where did that start? Obviously, we know you have a passion for it. Obviously, we know it's dear to you. And you don't just recognize, hey, guns are cool, but like you understand that these are foundational tenets of our country, right? We have to preserve these rights. But how did you get involved in doing this and being such a proactive voice for it?
Yes. So Women for Gun Rights itself, I'll do a little bit of that history first. They were started in 2016 by Diana Mueller, who is a law enforcement veteran and also a professional shooter. And she recognized that there was a gap between people understanding that, you know, firearm education, firearm safety, firearm wielding is a right that everyone has, you know, under the Constitution, and that is for everyone. And that was started under the name the DC Project because it was people coming from each state to congregate in DC and work on policy and education in that regard. And then kind of right after that, the timeline, it started to shift, and 2A was being, of course, as this audience, of course, knows, it was just being hammered. And then you launch into all of the mass school shootings that were happening and the start of Moms Demand Action, the, you know, the red shirt people who show up to every gun hearing because they're funded by Bloomberg at the tune of $60 million. You know, people have a special interest in being a weight against 2A and trying to take away our constitutional rights. And of course, that's not just, as we all know, about firearms themselves. That's about the Constitution. That's about the fabric of our country, things that are intrinsically American, you know, everything we've talked about today. And so Diana recognized this and they pivoted to call themselves Women for Gun Rights. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten involved in the last year or so, just honestly, because I started out as a fan. I saw what Women for Gun Rights was doing. I would run into them at different firearm events that I was there for, whether I was singing the anthem or speaking. And I would love to talk to Diana. And we have so much in common with the values we hold and what we believe and just a love for the Constitution. And I just wanted to help in any way I could. I've been to fly-ins with them. I've been to defense training with them. It's just been really a great relationship that I said, hey, I think that this is really important. And so as they've kind of grown and pivoted into this new chapter where They're really, you know, we've had a lot of conversations, and I think that leaning into explaining really that gun rights are for everyone, that firearm safety and education is for everyone, and being a, you know, helping even on the growing rather into the policy side as well, where we are, you know, piggybacking onto lawsuits, and we are speaking up about the fact that we don't need more legislation. I mean, nobody on this planet with a firearm wants more laws about firearms.
No doubt.
And so it's funny because you hop on these lawsuits or you even talk about enacting policy or legislation, and really it's protection against more legislation. But somebody needs to be having these conversations in a way that not only policymakers understand, and I believe in a lot of the ones that advocate for this, that they do understand, but I think that it's important to say that this is a big business thing, or a big money liberal issue. It's not just, you know, a policy or, hey, how do we feel about firearms? It's, I point back to Bloomberg and the fact that they're so heavily funded, and the fact that every 2A hearing in the country, small or large, has 20 people in red shirts showing up to it who are getting paid a fee to go. And there's got to be a counterbalance against that. It's why when we go to those hearings, we have our friends attending wear a 2A for Teal, a Teal t-shirt, because we want to show that it's not just, you know, people in red shirts who don't understand why they hate guns, but they do, attending. You know, we got to have a counterbalance for that. And so Women for Gun Rights is just here to say, hey, we're here on advocacy, we're here on education, we're here on policy. And so I wanted to help out in any way I could, and it's turned into being involved, and I'm really excited.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the training that you were talking about, the defensive training. What are you guys doing? Is this just like a range day, or is this some of the other maybe like hands-on training or like situational awareness training? You know what I mean? Those things are very good to have. Is that what you guys are doing?
So this specifically, it was sponsored by Women for Gun Rights. We had partnered with a facility that does this called WAFT. And so we went to WAFT, and a group of girls and I, you know, we were focused on making videos where people could understand some of the importance behind the advocacy, behind the education, behind the policy. And it was really a great experience. It was situational awareness training. It was defensive training. It was on-site scenario training, just really, really cool, cool facility. If you're ever in Orlando, it's great. Philip there is awesome, but it was a great lesson for us. And for me specifically, I fly a lot. So for me, the firearm side was something I have more training in. The hand-to-hand or just defensive to avoid a situation was something that I needed some polishing on. So, you know, I got some training with a tiny, you know, 4-inch long flashlight. And that's something I can fly with, which is great. And so that's the kind of training that we want to encourage and sponsor. Our plan with the organization itself is to put a lot of our weight in the policy department and the advocacy department, and then make sure that people, especially people who sign up for free on the website, have the newsletter, have videos with educational information, exclusive interviews with people that help them understand the landscape, and then resources like registers on where they can go in their state to go and train. Because ultimately, the only barrier between women carrying firearms or advocating for firearms or understanding really just the day in and day out, even if they hold the values, is just the intimidation of it. You know, oftentimes, this is why I'm really focused on getting men involved as well, because statistically, most women who visit a range for the first time or purchase their first firearm is with a guy that they trust.
Gotcha.
And so it's really important to get, you know, the whole family involved.
Yeah, no doubt. I love that you guys are doing the situational awareness training too. It's so important to have that and to teach people to be more aware of their surroundings. Because even as if you have a gun, if somebody can walk up or get within that 20 feet, 6 feet, you know, of you, having a gun may not may not help you at all. You know, something we are taught as law enforcement professionals as well is if somebody can get within that 20-foot space of you with a knife and you try to draw on them, you know, more than likely you're going to lose that, you know. And, you know, I had an experience very similar to that with somebody with a large field dressing knife. And I did not draw on them and wrestling with them and trying to get the, and was able to get the knife away from them. But, yeah, it's so important to teach those things because that will save your life more than having that gun, just having that gun on you and learning to pay attention to your surroundings and all the other things. Like you said, this flashlight, I'm sure you learned a lot of different things where you could be effective with that should you need to be, right? So why do you, as a woman, what are some things that you feel are so important to you guys specifically about being going and training, learning about firearms, learning about self-defense, all of this, like, why is that so important for women in this country, do you think?
Well, I think that firearms in general are the great equalizer. You know, as a woman, especially, we saw it during the riots. We saw it at any point, you know, during these crazy situations where you never think that 911's going to go down and 911 goes down. Or, you know, you have people in your own backyard. I mean, the world's a crazy place. And firearms are the great equalizer. You are your own first responder. Yeah. And so it's really critical to at least have some understanding if you do need to defend yourself, if you do need to protect yourself. You know, a lot of what we do as well is testify in these hearings state by state. And even we just went to DC last month and testified. Diana testified herself, talking about the fact that people who are women who have access and understanding of firearms are much more able to protect and defend themselves, mm-hmm. Whether they're on their own or if they have their kids with them, like just taking the stigma away from it. And then on the other side of things, you know, Moms Demand Action is advocating for things that are relatively, I think, unrelated even from what they initially set out to do. Of course, this is at the whim of whatever the left wants to fund that day, but I digress. For sure. You know, they want gun-free zones, and they want these things that inherently hurt women and children. You know, if you see a school with a gun-free zone, you know that nobody there is armed. We all know this. We all understand this. The left somehow doesn't understand this, or they just simply don't care. And so it's just to let people know that it's even deeper than making sure that women have firearms, even though that is the goal, right? If you knew that, if criminals knew that every woman was armed with a firearm, you would see the crime rate totally plummet. I mean, yeah. It's a defensive tactic just to know that
it's a deterrent, there's a gun at home.
It's preventable, mm-hmm. And it's a total deterrent. And so I think that having this as just more even a commonplace conversation is incredibly helpful.
Definitely making it a commonplace conversation for sure. I think it's funny that you bring up about, you know, the gun-free zones, because like you said, the left just can't seem to understand that it's bad people doing bad things when you commit crime. It's not the actual gun. Sort of the same way when they run around and set Teslas on fire, they're mad at a person, but they're taking it out on the object. It's like there's this weird thing that isn't clicking right, you know, personal property and all that. But yeah. Anyway. If so, you said you guys want to get more men involved to help, you know, make women feel more comfortable going and doing things on their own, going to find, you know, what sort of resources are you guys providing for women specifically? Like, say you're a woman, you've never used a gun before, maybe your husband or boyfriend or somebody you know has a father or whatever, but you want to learn more about what may be good for you, what sort of gun you want to use, because not all guns are the same. Some are bigger, some are smaller, right? They won't fit in your hand, all these things. Like, do you guys provide resources that are educational, just sort of tools like that, that women can say, I want to buy my first firearm, I don't know where to begin, and you guys say, hey, you can begin here, something like that?
Yes. So we're rolling out a lot very soon, rolling out a lot of video content, rolling out a lot of helpful registers to show you where you can go get defensively trained in your state, where you can go, where they might have a women's firearm meet night. You know, we're trying to get these resources so that women have a place to go as part of the Women for Gun Rights family to understand just really where to start. And then the rest is up to people that we've partnered with in each state and places that we've said, hey, we're sending Women for Gun Rights members here. You know, here we want to make sure that they're taken care of. It's really just creating those alliances so that you don't have to have, you're not tasked as the woman with having the first conversation or saying, you know, I'm looking to do this. You know, we want it to kind of be a softer place to go and just an easier conversation. So we're working on the state-by-state register. We're working on video content, explanatory videos on socials. And,
that's awesome.
And on the email newsletter send out as well. Unfortunately, with socials, I don't have to explain to anyone here how it is. If you put a gun on your Instagram, you're immediately, you know, censored. And
you are.
So we're trying to figure out a way, because if you never show a firearm, you can't properly educate on a firearm. And so we're trying to find ways to get people to understand through the socials, to come in through email, to be able to access those that video content. And then the other wing of what we do is in the policy and advocacy space, where we're going to be talking to legislators. We're going to be making sure that as we have a new administration, we're very much looking forward to the fact that we're not going to be on defense all the time. You know, nobody's going to be hemorrhaging, spending money on lawsuits that where they're just defending themselves against, anti-2A Kremlins, but we're actually going to be able to go on the offensive and hop on those, some of those cases over the next 4 years that are helpful for gun owners and for the Second Amendment. So we kind of have two different tracks here, and we're really excited about combining them to make people feel like they have an actual place in the conversation, even if they've never picked up a firearm before or it's their first time.
If you don't mind my asking, what is a specific avenue as far as where you're being offensive with a specific lawsuit that you guys are focused on? Is there one that you can speak on and give more detail on where you guys are kind of going after to protect those rights?
Yeah, we haven't announced it yet, and we haven't announced that avenue of things because we're just, like I said, new chapter. But we will be announcing it very soon, and we're really excited about it.
Okay, cool. So as far as where people can find, what websites, social media, all of that, I'd like to get that list, but I just wanted to say, I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with Rumble as well. We've helped quite a few gun tubers who were shadow banned over on YouTube, demonetized, and moved over to Rumble because they are able to make that sort of content where they can talk about weapons and they can get into the weeds and have whatever video they want. They can get out there and they can do it. So yeah. So that might be
if you're a Rumble fan. So the one I'm totally with you. One of my big things was that we need to have an entire Rumble exclusive series where we can actually get into the nitty gritty of what we want to talk about because Rumble is so great. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah, absolutely. We love Rumble. And, you know, to even go back to the American flag thing, the Instagram's algorithm was looking for people with flags and just the specific content and hashtags. But like you were going to get blacklisted automatically just for having that in your profile, which is crazy. You know, and I could tell that, you know, now that I don't trust Mark Zuckerberg at all, but after his, you know, bathed in the blood of Joe Rogan and, you know, been pulled over here a little bit to the right, you know, eating red meat again, I guess, you know, I could tell that the algorithm has gotten a little better for people like us, but Rumble absolutely has been amazing. You know, I have some really good contacts over there, amazing people, Rumble, all of those guys. It's fantastic. And it's awesome too. It's kind of funny because Rumble is a Canadian company, but here, you know, they support us all the time, you know, so you guys ever need contacts,
why they understand so well though too, like I think that's why Chris specifically has such a great outlook, because you know, these are people who have been through the censorship and they know exactly what this platform needs to not be.
You nailed
it. Which is fantastic. I have a show that I do on Rumble that I'm resuming. I had to take a minute off
because
the news cycle was just what I just had to wait for a certain date, but now we're coming back and it's called Between the Headlines. And I never even streamed it on YouTube once. I've been full Rumble the whole time just because
that's awesome.
I thought if I have to write what I'm saying around and bullet pointed around certain words, I'm going to lose my mind. So I'm huge Rumble fan.
Yeah, no, us too. Sounds like you probably have some contacts over there as well to help you out. But if you don't, I can definitely help by introducing you to a few people who have been significant in helping us over on Rumble. We love Rumble.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Thanks to
Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Can't say thank you to Rumble enough for literally they've changed our life here at the podcast by being over there and just how outstanding they are to understanding that this is these things are important to have conversations about and necessary to have conversations about. And by censoring people, all you're doing is creating an alternative market for these things. People are going to keep talking about them, you know, so you're not really doing anything other than being a jerk, to use a nice word for my dear America listeners. But no, where can people go to learn more about Women for Gun Rights, and where can people go to find you as well on social media? I know you said Rumble, but just that way people have a hub they can go to.
Yes. So Women for Gun Rights on all social platforms, Instagram, X, Facebook. It's just Women for Gun Rights. And then womenforgunrights.org is the website. Signing up is free. Putting in your email and getting our newsletter and rolling when we roll out our video content, you will have free access to that. We really want our members to feel like they're able to find a lot of resources just by putting their email in, and we promise we don't blow you up, but at least you'll have everything that we do as we do it. And we're excited again to make those announcements coming up here really soon. We are an organization, so we do have a donate button if you feel so inclined. Amazing. If not, being a member is plenty, so we're just happy to have you. My socials are at Alexis Wilkins across the board. My show here on Rumble is Between the Headlines, which we're coming back to it I think this coming week.
That's awesome.
So it's all, yeah, Alexis Wilkins anywhere you look.
Well, we do 2 live shows a week on Rumble, and it would be pretty awesome to have you on. It's Wednesday evenings and Friday evenings. If you ever want to, you're more than welcome to. We talk a lot about the news. Yes, that would be excellent, because Rumble has the ability to cross stream, so we could even stream it to both of our channels, which would be pretty neat. Get those audiences boosted up. So, but Alexis, thank you so much for coming and talking to us. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do more even in the live arena down the road here, but thank you again for coming on. It was super nice to talk to you. Glad to learn that there's somebody, you know, a group of people taking up the mantle for women in America, and that you guys understand, like you said, you were taught to understand all sides of this and be able to talk about what you actually believe in from an educational standpoint as well. So thank you again. Yeah, absolutely. And for all you guys listening, thank you so much for checking us out in this episode. Go check out Alexis and Women for Gun Rights. And then, as always, check out the sponsors in the show notes. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode.